Has anything cool and Jewish happened to you recently?
Well, I have been teaching. So I've been teaching third graders about the high holidays. By the time this airs, we're going to be so done with the high holidays, and it's so exciting. I'm so close to being done with them anyway. But yeah, kids made Torahs, little model Torah necklaces out of clay today, and they were very, very excited and into that.
That's really cute.
So yeah, that was very fun.
As for me, I went to Sukkot. It was the J Pride Sukkot, so like the explicitly queer Jewish organization.
Great.
And we borrowed Shir Tikva's sukkah. It was basically like there was a buffet on one side of the like outdoor concrete platform, and then there was the sukkah to the right of that, and a bunch of chairs like spreading out from the sukkah for like people who couldn't fit inside to sit. And it was just really fun. And also, like, if you've ever seen a picture of me, you know that I wear headscarves when I go outside and I'm around people who are not part of my family. When I was getting ready, though, my hair looked really cute. And I was like, okay, I'm going to a Jewish event and it's at night. So, like, we're just going to do this. And I went and immediately, like, my friend Yuval and my partner were both like, your hair is so pretty. And I was like, okay, I made the right decision. Cool.
Great. So I also cover my head, but I wear kippot usually and sometimes hats. And today I'm wearing a hat that I knitted, and it's like really cute and green and cabled and has a like brim on it.
I think I know the hat you're talking about.
Maybe. I'll probably post it online somewhere. I'm very findable. I'm a word nerd knitter on Twitter and Instagram, people. Anyway, but I came in to teach today and the kids were like, oh, why are you wearing a hat? And I was like, why aren't you wearing a hat?
Wow. And
the kid accepted that as an explanation. But then I was like, I usually wear a kippah. And they were like, yeah, but you're wearing a hat today. And I was like, well, it's a really cute hat. And they were like, yeah, it is. And I was like, ha.
Good.
Also, it's cold. It's cold here in New York. I'm glad that you got to hang out in your sukkah, because the Sukkot here, like the different ones here, like blew over in a storm.
Oh, no.
And people have had to like put them back together. And so I got to hear two different rabbis talking about their Sukkot being like, well, it is a holiday about vulnerability to the elements, I guess. let's embrace our vulnerability. So it's great.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about 11 degrees here Celsius. So like actually kind of warm for,
okay,
you know, October.
Sure.
In Minnesota.
Why do you do degrees in Celsius?
Well, two things. The second of which is going to be very obvious. The former is that I have a degree in like chemistry. And so for 4 years, I was using Celsius for, yeah, I have two degrees actually. Lulavin says she's a textbert, but if there's a degree on her wall, I haven't seen it because it is in a bag along with the other degree. Didn't hang those up.
What is the other one in?
Why so do I went to two Lutheran colleges, which was wild. And in the first one, I got a BA in chemistry and did educational licensure, but didn't get licensed as a teacher because I discovered I had ADHD and didn't do the like big video and essay projects. Whoops.
Uh-huh.
And then second college was computer science.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wild. Wild.
So okay. Other than the fact that I'm too disabled to work more than like 20 hours a week, I'm extremely employable.
Sure. What is the second reason you use Celsius?
I'm pretentious.
Yeah. Okay. I knew that one.
Yeah. Thanks for getting me back on track there.
Great.
1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Kosher Queer. It's a podcast with at least two Jews and generally more than three opinions. Each week we bring you queer takes on Torah. They're Jazz.
And she's Lulav.
And today we're going to talk to you about Vayera.
Yeah.
I am really glad that I actually remembered that because the script I'm looking at just says name of Parsha.
Yeah, well, but you remembered what we're talking about this week.
Yeah.
Which is great because I am going to ask you, like, right now to summarize the thing we're talking about this week.
Okay.
There's, like, a lot going on in this one. Last week, we had with a lot going on, and I had, like, 30 seconds, I think, and it didn't work. So,
okay. If I can find 75 seconds worth of short summary, would you spare me the alarm? Is that short enough?
75 seconds?
Uh-huh. That's 1 minute, 15 seconds.
I'm still going to time. How about this? I'll do it as a stopwatch.
I was making a joke about this, Parsha. I didn't actually mean don't time me.
I am going to time you, but
okay.
What if we try it for this week as we do a stopwatch instead of a timer? So instead of an alarm going off, I'll just be like, how long does it take you? I guess we're going to find out.
Okay.
Great. Okay. Ready, set, go.
Three divine strangers show up and party with Abraham while Sarah giggles in the background. The strangers leave and Abraham is running up that hill, open paren, make a deal with God, close paren, from Hounds of Love in 1985. He reckons if there are 10 righteous folks in Sodom and Gomorrah, they won't get destroyed. Pretty please. Smash cut to Lot chilling at the gates of Sodom, where he brings some angels to his house for a cozy night in. Literally everyone in town shows up demanding to rape them. Lot offers his virgin daughters to be raped instead, which the text paints as a good thing. The house Harry Potter's out of sight, and the angels are like, yeah, no, we're gonna destroy these cities for sure now. He leaves in the morning with his wife and daughters, and they hide in Smallville while Sodom and Gomorrah are destroyed, except for the aforementioned wife, who is now Salt. There's a bad incest joke. Abraham and Sarah are on the road again and do the sister act too, but this time Hashem stops that early, and they still get a bunch of money out of it. Yitzhak is born, and Sarah is a horrid person again, and they kick Hagar out. Hagar despairs in the wilderness, but Hashem takes care of her and Ishmael. Abraham and the king would almost shtup Sarah, argue about a well. Abraham and Yitzhak go on a little retreat because Hashem wants to test their relationship with him. And we end with a foreshadowing genealogy.
Wow. Well, first of all, amazing job. Second of all, you are almost at exactly 75 seconds. Did you, like,
plan that? I did time it at, like, 4 in the morning.
Okay. All right. Fine. Also, like, it is remarkable to have one that we that you wrote ahead of time. Real good.
Yeah, unusual. Somebody was playing their friend's SoundCloud at 4:20 in the morning with their window open, and I couldn't get back to bed, so I went and did podcast work.
Okay, I'm going to try writing mine ahead of time for next week.
It's funny either way, I promise.
Yeah, okay. I will say, like, really looking forward to next week because next week our episode comes out, one, on Thanksgiving, and two, next week our episode is Chaye Sarah, and that's my bat mitzvah portion.
Yeah.
So I might, I think, for next week, try and go dig up the Dvar Torah that I wrote and, like, put it as a Patreon extra.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Hashem comes in the form of three strangers, instantly known to Abraham as Adonai. He welcomes them with bowing and extreme hospitality. One of them says that Sarah will have a son by the time they return. She laughs privately, assuming that old people can't have nice things, and Adonai calls her out for it. Do you have any questions about this part, Jazz?
I do, kind of.
Okay.
More, I have a fan theory, and I wonder how you feel about it.
Loving it. What's up?
So, Sarah laughing at God is the first story of infertility, and there are a bunch of stories in the Torah about women who can't get pregnant, but I just want to, like, piece together, for this specific story, we have someone who's like, it is so ridiculous that I could get pregnant that I am laughing about it, and this is coming from somebody who has changed their name and is willing to laugh at God, and it says the way of women had ceased for Sarah, which I know is supposed to be, like, kind of cis-sexist reference to a period, but because it doesn't actually say that, it just says the way of women has ceased, so what if Sarah's trans?
Good. I'm so glad. Yeah. Oh, other story. I actually have a friend named Sarah who had an oopsie baby at 41.
Aw.
And Simon is adorable. I haven't seen him in a couple years, but cutest kid. So that is my relationship to laughing about stuff.
Great. When you were like, I have a friend named Sarah, I was like, yeah, all of us have a friend named Sarah. All of us have lots of friends named Sarah. It's a really common Jewish name.
Fair. Is anything too wonderful for the Lord? Anyway, are we good on this part?
Yeah, keep going.
Abraham shows the strangers the way to Sodom, and they say they're going to see if this Dom place and nearby Gomorrah are really as nasty as they're cracked up to be. And then they leave. Abraham stays where he is, but still communes with Hashem, saying, whoa, 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 what if there are like 50 cool people? That's not very copacetic of you if you wreck 50 cool cats. And Adonai is like, good point. Side note, I don't think anyone said anything about destroying the cities. Do you have questions here yet?
Well, no, God didn't say anything about destroying the city when Abraham starts pleading to save it. Like, he just yeah. goes for it. He just goes with, that's the assumption.
What if Abraham gave him that idea?
That's terrible.
Like, well, I made a covenant, but I guess if it's just these cities, might as well.
Maybe God said something, like, kind of misleading, and then they're arguing about it. It reminded me of this thing where, like, sometimes I'm talking to my students and I say something that's, like pretty actively silly just so I can go, like, is that right? And the students can all chorus, no!
But they do get very afraid of it.
But they do get very afraid of it. They're like, why is Jazz saying this ridiculous thing? And so is that what God is doing with Abraham, since God is actually, like, gives up on their points really, really easily?
Okay, I like that. But, like, literally, okay. Then the Lord said, how great is the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah, and how very grave their sin. I must go down and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry that has come to me, and if not, I will know. So basically, Hashem, in the form of these three strangers, have read a call-out post about these twin cities, and they're like, okay, can't be that bad. I'm just gonna check it out. And then Abraham is like, whoa, 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 don't destroy these cities. And it's just like, my guy.
Yeah. Well,
So no wonder his chain is getting yanked a little bit.
Yeah. Well, my translation is also a little bit different. And so I sort of went down a different path with it because it doesn't say sin. This one says, like, the outcry in Sodom and Gomorrah, how great it is, and their crime, how grave it is. Let me go down and determine whether they are wreaking havoc in equal measure to the shrieking that is coming to me. And to me, I was just like, oh, the city called Sodom, where the gay people come from, is they're, like, wrecking havoc, doing crime, and then people are, like, shrieking about it. They're, like, having a great time.
Okay, so two things on that. One, I've gotten some very interesting anonymous DMs about Sodom and Gomorrah.
Okay.
Two is, like, the whole where gay people come from thing is actually a back formation. Ooh. Because Christians interpreted the, like, crimes of Sodom as, like, laying with men, as opposed to, like, being really inhospitable and demanding to rape strangers.
Right. I don't mean to, like, Judaism has been pretty clear that, like, the, like, sin of Sodom and Gomorrah are regarding them being, like, general terrible people, and that the, like, connection to the word sodomy is, like, a super Christian thing. Like, that connection only exists in English and in Christianity. I was being a little facetious. But, you know, like, still.
As the prophet said to sodomy, it's between God and me.
Okay.
Got the Rent references in there. Okay. So anyway, Abraham is like, okay, what if five of them are nasty boys, but there are still 45 rootin' tootin' jazz hounds? And Adonai is like, okay, I can see that maybe. 40? 30? 20? Okay, I'm pushing it here, but 10? Yeah, sure. And that's where the chapter ends.
Yeah. So I have two questions on that part.
Yes, one, please.
Even if we're going with the assumption that there is destruction happening, two, why does Abraham assume that the options are destroy the whole city or not? Like,
or do nothing. Yeah.
Right. Why wouldn't he be like, God is almighty and all powerful, and I bet Z could kill only the wicked people?
This just shows how hard it is to actually get a paradigm of restorative justice going.
Say more.
No, it's just when you grow up with a very, like, if someone does a murder, you murder them sort of morality, it takes a while to learn how to, like, work towards a better future with people who have done wrong. And so Abraham is just like, yeah, okay, because they did bad things, you're going to literally kill them. Which, turns out, is what happens, but...
Right, but also it's kind of cool that Abraham is like, well, but I'm going to argue for them. Like, I assume you're going to destroy them, but that's not what I want to happen.
Yeah.
Also, we have no idea how many people are in any of these cities. We just get like, well, but if there is a minimum number of people, you have to save the whole thing, which is kind of cool.
And this is... one of, or the textual bases for, like, the Mignon.
So I looked like it up.
Yeah?
I looked it up because it's not officially.
It's not? Okay. It's
officially, the Mignon comes from a thing later about, like, spies and 10 tribes and, significantly less cool thing.
Is that from Joshua?
Maybe. Yes, I think so.
Was not a fun time.
No, but this is really fun that like you need 10 people to save a city or like 10 people to pray together. And yeah, how do you feel about that? And why 10?
So like if you're looking at organizational integrity and there's like one good person, maybe like for some reason the executive director of an organization is a cool person, but like the rest of the people are narcs, that's not a cool organization. That's one specific cool person. But like if half of the organization is cool people who want to let people live and half of it is narcs, maybe it's still a cool organization. It's basically they're negotiating the amount of people it takes to say like this is a cool group as opposed to a cool person. Is how I see that.
That's a good thought. Yeah. I don't know if this is true, but I had this association in my mind of like, if you get much bigger than 10 people, like you start to tend to have hierarchies in it. And it's, if you're like at 10 people, you can still basically be like, and we'll just all discuss until we agree and figure out what to do.
Yeah.
Okay. We ready to move on?
So the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway, and he just pops up and is like, hey, you can spend the night with us. And they're like, no, it's okay. We'll spend the night in the square. But he's just like, no, I've got bread, and I'll get some firstlings of the flock, I think. Wait. No, that was Abraham before. My bad. I read this at 3 a.m.
Great.
But yeah, so like they do have a feast. The urban equivalent of a feast. And they ate and were chatting for a while. And then all of the other people in Sodom had been like talking about these visitors. And they came and were like, hey, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we may know them. Which sucks. Lot went outside and shut the door behind him so that, like, the people in question weren't having to plead for their lives. And he was like, guys, can you not... Wait, I can't swear on this podcast. Can you not be dinguses for a second? I have two daughters who have not known a man. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Just don't do anything to these strangers who I am inviting into my house as guests. How do you feel about that, Jazz?
So I feel bad about it in general, but I, okay, much like the last time where I was like, can I just toss you a fan theory? I'm going to ask you one and see how you feel about it. Because what if, okay, Lot is definitely presented by the narrative here as supposed to be a good guy. Like, we know that because Lot gets to escape the city, right?
Right.
Along with basically nobody else. But, proposal here, what if Lot is the worst one in the situation? Like, the only bad one. Which I say because we don't know anything about the city except that it has a like specific type of reputation, and they're like, here we do crimes and cause havoc and people yell about it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you could assume, like going to Vegas or whatever, that when people come to visit, like, they're looking to, like, you know, get kind of messed up. So they're like, hey, visitors, we want to hang out with them.
Oh, interesting.
And Lot's like, absolutely not, that is disgusting, go away. Here are my daughters who are better. Which is a gross thing to do with your daughters.
Sure is.
Yeah, but like, what if we didn't assume that the people of the city were being as gross as Lot is thinking?
So I don't think that that's a valid reading for this text, but I love that midrash so much. Thank you.
Fine.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a different question then relatedly, because... which is just like, is there any way to read this text like now in which Lot is a good dude as opposed to just different ways of being a bad dude? Like, why does Lot get saved? What is Lot's value here?
So, like, hospitality to strangers was a much bigger thing and, like, codified thing in ye olden days. So, like, it's said that the sin of Sodom is actually being bad to visitors. Not so much the sexual crimes. And so I think there is an interpretation where he is a good person. It's just that he also offers up his daughters for sexual violence.
Right.
And that really sucks.
Right.
Like, that part is unacceptable, inexcusable. There we go.
Yeah.
And it's just... like, I get the idea of, like, you can mess with my household, just don't mess with these strangers who are staying with my household. And I think that is, at the heart of it, offering up your daughters for sexual violence aside, I think that that's a really good way to be.
I mean, it's certainly not one we've internalized. Like, if the idea is, like, here is an extreme example of how you are welcoming to people, and, like, we should be using that to, like, completely bend over backwards to welcome people to our towns, to make sure that they feel comfortable, to, like, just take people in. If that was a thing we embraced wholeheartedly, like, society would work really, really differently. You know, like, what is this immigration thing anyway? You know, like, I also, it reminds me a little bit of, I was at the Trans Jews Are Here convening back in March. And I met someone there who I had never met before, who was like, yeah, so I just kind of came in last minute to go to this thing, and I don't have a place to stay, but I just really wanted to be here, and the place where I was staying is like an hour and a half away, and what do I do? And I was like, you can stay with me.
Oh,
and she was like, just met. And I was like, yes, but you are here at this thing, and so, like, I'm sorry, like, I'm not worried.
Who doesn't offer to let a trans person crash with them?
Right. Anyway, that was great. And she stayed with me for a couple nights and we're still friends. So
that's cool.
All right. Keep going.
So yeah, things break bad and the angels open up the door and drag Lot bodily back in. And then the people are struck with blindness. So they were unable to find the door, which is why in the short summary I said Harry Potter's out of sight.
Oh, okay. All right.
Like, the Black family home.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. I didn't understand that reference. And I...
I made a lot of references that are incoherent to anyone except me at 4 a.m.
Okay. I mean, normally I get your Harry Potter references. I listen to, like, 4 different Harry Potter podcasts. This is a thing I continue to be invested in. It's, like, not one of my favorite qualities about myself. Anyway, like...
Yeah, I was trying to find a way to say, like, the one oath, but A, I couldn't remember the name of that spell.
Lumos?
Secret keeping.
Oh, the secret keeping one. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So I just went with the house Harry Potter's out of sight. We're done.
Yeah, okay, great.
Anyway, they're back in the house, and the angels are like, do you have anyone else in this city you like? Because we're definitely about to destroy this place. All the call-out posts were correct. And Lot goes to his sons-in-law. Back to the, like, daughters thing. Like, these are people old enough to be engaged.
Yeah.
And it's just wild that you would mess with someone's autonomy like that. So, yeah, he's like, guys, you gotta get out of here. The Lord's about to destroy the city. And they're just like, yeah, right, old man. Hey, we still good for drinking whiskey on Friday? And he's like, no, and leaves.
It does a little bit beg the question. The question I wrote down here is, my text says he appeared to be joking. And
right.
Does this mean that, like, our character note about Lot is that Lot is the type of person about whom you would say, yeah, like, he just regularly jokes about, like, how the city's gonna be destroyed. So, like, when he said it this time, like, it just seemed like a normal part of his personality.
Good. Yeah, I read that more as the sons-in-law just didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would God destroy the city?
Sure. Okay.
That's so out of proportion with what you would expect. And I guess Lot just, yeah, doesn't have the reputation for being truthful that would lend them to believing him.
Okay.
Yeah. So morning dawns and the angels are like, dude, you gotta get going. Take your wife and your two daughters or the bad stuff is about to happen. And he's like, oh, but I want to take all my nice shoes with me. And so the angels just, like, take him and his wife and two daughters by the hand and drag them out of the house and city. They go to Zoar, which the note in my copy says little, which is why I called it Smallville.
Great, great.
Yeah. So Lot is just a spoil sport for, like, all of this. He drags his feet out of the house. He doesn't want to go to the hills. And instead, he asks if it's okay if he goes to Smallville.
Lot is the worst.
Yeah. Though he did start a proud tradition of our people being nebbishy. So then there's the destruction. Lot's wife looks back at Sodom and Gomorrah and gets turned into a pillar of salt.
Yeah. Okay, so why salt?
Good question.
What do you think? This is not a textual basis. I did not ask you to look it up.
Why salt? Is this something to do with, like, being salty?
I mean, I would go with an assumption that it is something about, like, tears, but I don't know.
Mm. Oh, yeah, like, she's crying for the culture that she misses.
Yeah.
And so because she's got those salty tears, she can just be made of salt. Okay, bye. But yeah, that's how I interpret looking back.
Mm.
That it's less about, like, Orpheus, you know, checking to make sure that Eurydice is still there. And it's more about, like, oh, but I was gonna go to tea with the girls on Saturday.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, they were horrible people.
Question, though. Okay, because Abraham argues for saving the city, and if Lot's wife, who I don't think we get a name for, is also like, oh, I'm really sad about the city being destroyed, like, why doesn't she get cred for that?
So, again, I'm interpreting this more as a personal thing, like, oh, all this cool stuff about the city was left behind, rather than, oh, there are people being destroyed. Like a selfishness. I still don't think that, like, turning someone into a pillar of salt is necessarily the correct thing to do when they are. Yeah.
Yeah, seemed like not a great part of the, like, justice process.
Right?
Okay, next.
Next, they... Oh, God.
Yep.
Okay. They go to Zoar, except for Lot's like, I don't want to hang around in Smallville. So he goes up into the hills with his two daughters, and they think that they're the only ones left on Earth, basically, So they're like, okay, in order to keep humans going, we have to get pregnant by our father. So they get him blackout drunk and rape him in order to be inseminated.
Yes.
So I said in the short summary that there's a bad incest joke. And the text indicates that the Moabites and Ammonites were just like nearby neighbors of the Hebrews. And so this is basically just in here to be like, haha, those people over there are inbred.
Oh, gross.
And I hate it.
Gross. That's gross. Also, my notes on this section are just like, what? What? What?
Yeah.
The worst. The worst.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we were like, Lot is the worst. And also, he is being the worst to his daughters. And now his daughters are also the worst.
Yeah.
How are these the family that they're like, you know who we should save in the city? These people.
I feel like it's just because Lot is related to Abraham. Honestly.
He gets, like, godly nepotism.
Yeah. Maybe he is just saved so that they can make the incest joke. I don't know. Anyway, from there, Abraham journeyed towards the Negev. He meets up with King Abimelech of Gerar. And he's doing the same thing where, as a resident alien, he's pretending that Sarah is his sister instead of his wife. And almost the same thing happens, except for the Lord appears to Abimelech in a dream and is like, hey dude, she's a married woman. Cease this. And so he, like, wakes up and is like, hey, Abraham, why did you do this? This is ridiculous. You should have just told me that she was a married woman. And Abraham said, I did it because I thought there is no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. And, like, that might have passed when he was in a completely foreign environment, but hate it.
Oh, you forgot the second part of his explanation?
Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife.
Right. So, he doesn't say that last time, he just says it this time, and So the option here is either they are half-siblings, or he just lied to Abimelech and thinks that that's better.
Like, he's giving himself as many excuses as possible. Like, I didn't actually lie to you, she is my sister.
Right. Which of those do you think sounds more plausible?
So having read the footnote about, like, him just lying to save face, That makes sense. It doesn't seem implausible that they would be half-siblings, though. I don't know.
Yeah. This family is a mess.
They're a mess. Okay, so Abimelech gives them a bunch of presents, and apparently in the interim, the Lord had closed fast all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Which, wild?
Yeah.
I guess they were hanging around long enough to discover that?
Yeah. She must have been there for a while.
Or maybe this is the retelling of how all of Abimelech's other wives were like, no, we don't like her. Why is she here? And they, you know,
don't get pregnant.
They did a Lysistrata about it.
Yeah.
So the Lord dealt with Sarah as he had said. She conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age. So this is Yitzhak. His name is based on the root for laughter. Mm-hmm. Because at first she laughed when she heard that she would have a baby. And now God has brought laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me.
Yeah. It's kind of sweet. Name your kid Laughter.
It is sweet, except immediately she's like, oh, you know, Hagar's still hanging around, and like, I guess Ishmael's your son, but I don't like him. Can we just like get rid of those two? Which, I hate this. This is just not a good parsha for them to be decent people in.
Yeah, I will say this decision is more explicitly condemned by the narrative, it feels like to me, in that, like, Abraham seems kind of upset about it, and also God seems pretty upset about it. So, kudos to God, I guess.
Yeah. I just don't feel like eventually having a nation made of your son is a reason to get kicked out of the people you've been living with for, like, a decade or more.
Oh, no, it's bad. And also, he's, like, a teen, right? Like, this does have a lot of parallels for me of, like, these are folks who get kicked out of their family's home, you know, because, like, mm-hmm. through no fault of their own. Like,
Dad made a new family.
Yeah. So.
So, yeah, Abraham is like, hey, I'm not feeling good about this. And God is like, well, it's going to be fine. I'll take care of her. Just do whatever Sarah says to you. So he gives them bread and a skin of water, which, like, that is not enough.
True. I sort of thought this was, like, the way you have, what's the montage shots, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is the one where, like, we see the scene in intricate detail of, like, the mm-hmm. first night, and they're getting water, and they're gonna have food, and then the next bit is, and then he grows up, and, like, he's okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think we're supposed to assume, though maybe it's a generous read, but I think we're supposed to assume that basically, like, they're provided for.
In the AU where DreamWorks kept making biblical movies, the, like, Viara equivalent of Deliver Us is playing as Abraham just, like, hands out a skin of water dramatically.
Yeah.
Okay, so she sets him down in the wilderness and is despairing because, like, she doesn't have enough supplies and she's all on her own and she has, like, a young child. And God comes to her and is like, do not be afraid. You'll be totally fine. Also, here's a well of water. So there's a nice, tidy wrap up here where God is with the boy and he grew up and lived in the wilderness and became a bow expert, like Nietzsche in his emo poetry. He lived in the wilderness of Paran and his mother got a wife for him from the land of Egypt. And that's, as far as I can tell, the last we hear of Ishmael. Is that true?
We'll keep an eye out for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Ishmael launch.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's back to Abimelech and Abraham, and there's some disagreement about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, and Abraham is like, no, I totally dug this. Here, have 7 ewes to, like, let you write me a deed to the well. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in this story.
But also, we are 45 minutes into the recording.
This so is, I think, gonna be a little bit long one. Also, because so much stuff happens in this parsha.
This is also the episode where we almost swear a bunch.
Apparently.
Okay. After these things, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham. And he said, here I am. And there's the whole, like, take your son Isaac and go sacrifice him, okay?
Yeah.
And Abraham just does it.
I have 2 things to interrupt with here.
Yes.
The first one is, there's this line that said, mm-hmm. take your son, your only one, the one you love, Isaac, and go forth. And I was about to be like, so why does God say it like that? But then before I tossed this question to you, I looked it up and I found... that Rashi wrote a thing about it. Rashi's like real old-timey, famous commentator. I don't remember when Rashi wrote at me.
He's listed first on Sepharia for every commentary.
Yeah, I mean, he wrote on everything. Anyway, but so there is a commentary on this line that is explaining why God says all of these things in the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
That says, Abraham... God said, take your son. And Abraham goes, I have 2 sons. Like, which one? And then God goes, like, you're only one. And Abraham is like, that does not narrow it down. Like, one is the only son of this mother and one is the only son of this mother. Like, try again. And God says, the one you love. And Abraham is like, really? Seriously? I love both of them. I love my children. And finally, God just goes, Isaac. I'm talking about Isaac.
I was trying to be dramatic, but...
yeah. I just appreciate that we have this, like, side note under-the-radar commentary that just features Abraham once again having a snarky argument with God.
Did you ever read Fear and Trembling by Kierkegaard?
No.
It's a book in which he discusses, like, concepts of faith and resignation. And he does, like, Christian Midrash.
Okay.
Where he retells this story over and over again with little changes every time. Like, one story illustrates that Abraham is just, like, a sad dude. Or, like, it's been a decade since I read this. But it's, like, in one story, Abraham is just, like, oh, nothing's gonna happen. It's fine. And in one story, he's, like, well, I gotta sacrifice my son, but I gotta sacrifice my son. I'm just gonna do it.
Mm-mm.
And then in the one that illustrates, like, the knight of faith that we're all supposed to aspire to, it was like, okay, I'll go along with this, but I genuinely believe that it'll work out fine in the end. And that was just a really fun thing that I read, like, freshman year.
I actually did, so the other question that I was going to ask was a request that you make a small midrash, which is just, what did Abraham tell Isaac they were doing?
I think he just went for a camping trip. Like, that's how this is phrased. It's like, okay, I've got the wood for the offering, let's go. And then, like, halfway there, Isaac is like, hey, Dad, where's the thing that we were gonna sacrifice on that fire? And Abraham's just like, oh, there's gonna be a ram there, it's fine, we're good. We'll find it, don't worry.
Since we know that Abraham is fine with lying to people.
Yeah. And then they get there and he just, like, sneaks up on his son and ties him down to the pyre. Is, I think, how that went.
Okay.
And he doesn't want to, but he does anyway. And luckily, just as he's about to stab his son, an angel appears and says, Abraham, Abraham. And he says, Hineni. And the angel says, like, don't hurt him. Because now we figured out that you will do anything that God says.
Yeah.
By the way, if your intimate partner does something like this, like, tells you to do something that seems really out of the ordinary and is just like, oh, I was just testing you. Like, please break up with them. That's really abusive.
Yeah. Are you saying we should divorce God?
Sure. Or at least admonish God and be like, hey, if you want to be my lover, you gotta not make me sacrifice myself. That doesn't come out right. But like, no ultimata, no like fake things. Let's be on the level here. All I'm saying is, I'm not sure that I would have gone for this.
Yeah, I mean, there is the argument. So would you say Abraham passes or fails this test?
Oh, absolutely passes. What do you mean?
Well, because, like, there is that argument, right, of, like, the test was also around this idea of, like, I mean, Abraham isn't ever supposed to kill him, right? So there is this idea of, like, if he'd really gone through with it, like, that would have been a failure. Like, he was not supposed to.
Interesting. Yeah, like if... Yeah, that's wild. Okay. So a ram shows up. He sacrifices that. And then there's a restatement of the covenant. Because you have obeyed my voice. And then we end with a genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's Vayera.
All right. Let's rate this one.
Yeah. Out of... See, all the ones that I can think of have really low numbers.
I feel like that's okay. Out of 10 righteous people who might or might not exist, what would you rate this Parsha?
Honestly, a 2.
Ooh.
The only redeeming quality is that it's interesting.
Is that it's interesting?
Yeah. Like, there are interesting stories about, like, deciding how righteous a group of people is, and stories of, like, not looking back and stuff like that. But there's also completely unnecessary incest jokes. And just, like, everybody's being a... What's a word I can say?
A mean person.
Yeah. Everybody's being mean. And it's just not... I don't like it. So 2 out of 10 righteous people.
Fascinating. Okay.
Who must escape into the hills.
Okay.
Jazz. Out of one son, your only son, the one whom you love, Yitzhak, what would you rate this Parsha?
This this is not fair. Like, I know you were a computer science person now, I guess, but, like, I don't love the binaries of ones and zeros. Like, what am I supposed to do here? Anyway.
Well, you use a bunch of ones and zeros to make a data structure.
Yeah, okay, all right. This is not giving me a lot of room to work with, but I'm going to give it the full one. Okay. Because I thought this one has a lot more room for interpretation than the other ones. Like, we kept looking at it and saying, well, I don't know that the plain meaning of the text is like that, but you definitely could try to read it that way. And I feel like there's a lot of room to sort of find interesting things in the text. And also, I appreciate this framework that's happening a lot of the text does sort of narratively condemn some of the actions, like when people are doing bad things, like
the Torah, but not enough of them
tells us that some of them are bad, and I do think that there is that sort of interesting choice of, like, these are the people who are supposed to be, like, are at least figurative ancestors, and they are all cast as pretty deeply imperfect and flawed. Look, there's something to be said for that we don't come from perfect people. We're not aspiring to be like them necessarily. And that's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. Aspire to be the best you can be. Don't aspire to be like a person who already existed.
Right. And also, but I do also like that this Torah portion includes the arguing with God, like, on a number of occasions, and that it includes several women, which I know feels like a low bar, but, like...
Do any of them talk to each other about something that is not a man?
I guess it depends how you interpret Sarah and Hagar's relationship.
They don't talk to each other.
Okay, but people don't get very many lines. Like, they do they do both talk. Both of them talk to God and to angels, and neither God or angels are men, so...
I just want to point out that the Bechdel test is for whether you can find lesbian subtext in a movie.
I know.
And so, I guess you could make something out of it, but Sarah sounds really unfortunately straight.
Look, I posited that Sarah is trans. I think it's fine. I think it's fine. Anyway, so I felt decently positive about this chapter, though not mostly the people in it.
You know, that's very Solomonic of you to be like, okay, we're going to have one Yitzhak instead of, like, cutting him up into halves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, continuity corner.
Yeah. So, for our continuity corner, I tried to look up the question we were talking about last week with slavery in the ancient Middle East. And I had a hard time. So, listeners, if any of you have knowledge about the nature of slavery in the ancient Middle East, email us or DM us or whatever, and I will share your information with everybody else. So, but I did find an excerpt from a thing that was written by Trua, who are the, like, rabbis for human rights, who are not talking so much historically, but are talking about grappling with slavery in the Torah overall. They quote this bit that says, the Torah actually tries to make enslaving others difficult, if not impossible, and in other words, does sort of frame this as more of an indentured servitude type of deal, and also holds this bit that we haven't gotten to yet from Leviticus, where God says, for they are my servants who I freed from the land of Egypt. They may not give themselves over into servitude. And the idea is that if you are positing people as servants to God, that then they cannot be, like, held indefinitely in servitude to other people. And then there's a note that says the Talmud uses the same verse as evidence to say that workers can always quit.
Also, I want to clarify my position from last episode. I think that indentured servitude is better than chattel slavery, but, like, it's bad.
Right.
Like, relying on somebody to give you resources and in exchange you sell yourself as a whole person, that's just unspeakable.
Right. I mean, it is horrible, and the way it seems to be framed is more of the way we might think of, I think, I am not a historian, but I think framed as more of the way we might think of selling your labor so that you can survive and pay off your debts, which is a thing we have now, which is also a bad thing now, but yes.
I want to be clear that, like, rent that's 80 to 150% of your income and working for a pittance, performing both physical and emotional labor for, like, Starbucks, that's profoundly evil too.
Right. Not as evil as slavery. Still bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though we still do have slavery in the United States, which is based on underpaying people for labor such that if they don't do the labor, they will starve or be kept in solitary confinement.
Mm.
So, like, yeah.
Yeah.
That really sucks. Abolish prisons now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our official stance. Great. Okay, so that's the end of our continuity corner.
Jazz, can you take us to the close?
I super can. Thanks for listening to Kosher Queers. If you like what you've heard, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/kosherqueers, which will give you bonus content and help us keep making this for you. You can also follow us on Twitter at kosherqueers, or like us on Facebook at kosherqueers, or email us your questions, comments, and concerns at kosherqueers@gmail.com. Our artwork is by the talented Lior Gross. Our music is courtesy of the fabulous band Brivola, whose work you can find on Bandcamp. Go buy their album. They're great. Our sound production is done by my lovely co-host, Lulav Arnau.
Heck yeah!
I'm Jazz Twersky, and you can find me at WordNerdKnitter on Twitter. I recorded this audio on the traditional lands of the Lenape people.
I'm Lulav Arnau, and you can find me at SpaceTruck6 on Twitter. Or yell at me at PalmLiker. I recorded this audio on the traditional lands of the Wapekute and Anishinaabeg.
Have a lovely queer Jewish day.
This week's gender is a full plate of eggs Benedict.
This week's pronouns are fry frine.